Chapter 63, Talk with the Kings. Segment 1. Ere Zarathustra had been an hour on his way in the mountains and forest, he saw all at once a strange procession. Right on the path which he was about to descend came two kings walking, bedecked with crowns and purple girdles and variegated like flamingos. They drove before them a laden ass. "What do these kings want in my domain?" said Zarathustra in astonishment to his heart, and hid himself hastily behind a thicket. When, however, the kings approached to him, he said half aloud, like one speaking only to himself, "Strange, strange, how does this harmonize? Two kings do I see, and only one ass." Thereupon the kings made a halt. They smiled and looked toward the spot whence the voice proceeded, and afterwards looked into each other's faces. "Such things do we also think among ourselves," said the king on the right, "but we do not utter them." The king on the left, however, shrugged his shoulders and answered, "That may perhaps be a goatherd, or an anchorite who has lived too long among rocks and trees, for no society at all spoils also good manners." "Good manners," replied angrily and bitterly the other king, "what then do we run out of the way of? Is it not good manners, our good society? Better, verily, to live among anchorites and goatherds than with our gilded, false, over-rogue populace, though it call itself good society, though it call itself nobility. But there, all is false and foul, above all the blood, thanks to old evil diseases and worse cures. The best and dearest to me at present is still a sound peasant, coarse, artful, obstinate, and enduring. That is at present the noblest type. The peasant is at present the best, and the peasant type should be master. But it is a kingdom of the populace. I no longer allow anything to be imposed upon me. The populace, however, that means hodgepodge. Populous hodgepodge. Therein is everything mixed with everything. Saint and swindler, gentleman and Jew, and every beast out of Noah's Ark. Good manners. Everything is false and foul with us. No one knows any longer how to reverence. It is that precisely that we run away from. They are fulsome, obtrusive dogs. They gild palm leaves. This loathing chokes me, that we kings ourselves have become false, draped and disguised with the old faded pomp of our ancestors, showpieces for the stupidest, the craftiest, and whosoever at present traffics for power. We are not the first men, and have nevertheless to stand for them. Of this imposture have we at last become weary and disgusted. From the rabble have we gone out of the way, from all those bawlers and scribe blowflies, from the traitor stench, the ambition fidgeting, the bad breath. Fie to live among the rabble. Fie to stand for the first man among the rabble. Ah, loathing, loathing, loathing! What does it now matter about us kings? Your old sickness seizes you, said here the king on the left. Your loathing seizes you, my poor brother. You know, however, that someone hears us. Immediately thereupon, Zarathustra, who had opened ears and eyes to this talk, rose from the hiding place, advanced towards the kings, and thus began. He who hearkens to you, he who gladly hearkens to you, is called Zarathustra. I am Zarathustra who once said, "What does it now matter about kings? Forgive me. I rejoiced when you said to each other, 'What does it matter about us kings?' Here, however, is my domain and jurisdiction. What may you be seeking in my domain? Perhaps, however, you have found on your way what I seek, namely, the higher man." When the kings heard this, they beat upon their breast and said with one voice, "We are recognized. With the word of your utterance, sever you the thickest darkness of our hearts. You have discovered our distress, for lo, we are on our way to find the higher man, the man that is higher than we, although we are kings. To him do we convey this ass, for the highest man shall also be the highest lord on earth. There is no sore misfortune in all human destiny than when the mighty of the earth are not also the first men. Then everything becomes false and distorted and monstrous. and when they are even the last men, and more beast than man, then rises and rises the populace in honor, and at last says even the populace virtue, Lo, I alone am virtue. What have I just heard? Answered Zarathustra. What wisdom in kings? I am enchanted, and verily, I have already promptings to make a rhyme thereon, even if it should happen to be a rhyme not suited for everyone's ears. I unlearned long ago to have consideration for long ears. Well then, well now. Here, however, it happened that the ass also found utterance. It said distinctly and with malevolence, Yea. 'Twas once, methinks, you're one of our blessed Lord. Drunk without wine, the Sibyl thus deplored. How ill things go, decline, decline, ne'er sank the world so low. Rome now has turned harlot and harlot stew. Rome Caesar a beast, and God has turned Jew. Segment 2. With those rhymes of Zarathustra, the kings were delighted. The king on the right, however, said, O Zarathustra, how well it was that we set out to see you, for your enemies showed us your likeness in their mirror. There looked you with a grimace of a devil and sneeringly, so that we were afraid of you. But what good did it do? Always did you prick us anew in heart and ear with your sayings. Then did we say at last, What does it matter how he look? We must hear him, him who teaches. You shall love peace as a means to new wars, and the short peace more than the long. No one ever spoke such warlike words. What is good? To be brave is good. It is the good war that hallows every cause. O Zarathustra, our father's blood stirred in our veins in such words. It was like the voice of spring to old wine casks. When the swords ran among one another like red-spotted serpents, then did our fathers become fond of life. The sun of every peace seemed to them languid and lukewarm. The long peace, however, made them ashamed. How they sighed, our fathers, when they saw on the wall brightly furbished, dried-up swords. Like those, they thirsted for war. For a sword thirsts to drink blood and sparkles with desire. When the kings thus discoursed and talked eagerly of the happiness of their fathers, there came upon Zarathustra no little desire to mock at their eagerness. For evidently, they were very peaceable kings whom he saw before him, kings with old and refined features. But he restrained himself. Well, said he, here leads the way. There lies the cave of Zarathustra, and this day is to have a long evening. At present, however, a cry of distress calls me hastily away from you. It will honor my cave if kings want to sit and wait in it, but to be sure, you will have to wait long. Well, what of that? Where does one at present learn better to wait than at courts? And the whole virtue of kings that has remained to them, is it not called today ability to wait? Thus spoke Zarathustra. Chapter 64. The Leech. And Zarathustra went thoughtfully on, further and lower down, through forest and past moory bottoms. As it happens, however, to everyone who meditates upon hard matters, he trod thereby unawares upon a man. And lo, there spurted into his face all at once a cry of pain, and 2 curses and 20 bad invectives, so that in his fright he raised his stick and also struck the trodden one. Immediately afterwards, however, he regained his composure, and his heart laughed at the folly he had just committed. Pardon me, said he to the trodden one, who had got up enraged and had seated himself. Pardon me, and hear first of all a parable. As a wanderer who dreams of remote things on a lonesome highway runs unawares against a sleeping dog, a dog which lies in the sun. As both of them then start up and snap at each other, like deadly enemies, those 2 beings mortally frightened, so did it happen to us. And yet how little was lacking for them to caress each other, that dog and that lonesome one. Are they not both lonesome ones? Whoever you are, said the trodden one, still enraged, you tread also too near with me with your parable, and not only with your foot. Lo, am I then a dog? And thereupon the sitting one got up and pulled his naked arm out of the swamp. for at first he had lain outstretched on the ground, hidden and indiscernible, like those who lie in wait for swamp game. "But whatever are you about?" called out Zarathustra in alarm, for he saw a deal of blood streaming over the naked arm. "What has hurt you? Has an evil beast bit you, you unfortunate one?" The bleeding one laughed, still angry. "What matter is it to you?" said he, and was about to go on. "Here I am at home and in my province. Let him question me whoever will. To a dolt, however, I shall hardly answer." "You are mistaken," said Zarathustra sympathetically, and held him fast. "You are mistaken. Here you are not at home, but in my domain, and therein shall no one receive any hurt. Call me, however, what you will. I am who I must be. I call myself Zarathustra." "Well, up here is the way to Zarathustra's cave. It is not far. Will you not attend to your wounds at my home? It has gone badly for you, you unfortunate one, in this life. First a beast bit you, and then a man trod upon you." When, however, the trodden one had heard the name of Zarathustra, he was transformed. "What happens to me?" he exclaimed. "Who preoccupies me so much in this life as this one man, namely Zarathustra, and that one animal that lives on blood, the leech? For the sake of the leech did I lie here by the swamp, like a fisher, and already had mine outstretched arm been bitten 10 times, when there bites a still finer leech at my blood, Zarathustra himself. O happiness, O miracle! Praise be this day which enticed me into the swamp. Praise be the best, the livest cupping glass that at present lives. Praise be the great conscious leech, Zarathustra." Thus spoke the trodden one, and Zarathustra rejoiced at his words and the refined reverential style. "Who are you?" asked he, and gave him his hand. "There is much to clear up and elucidate between us, but already, I think, a pure clear day is dawning." "I am the spiritually conscientious one," answered he who was asked, "and in matters of the spirit, it is difficult for anyone to take it more rigorously, more restrictedly, and more severely than I, except him from whom I learned it, Zarathustra himself. Better know nothing than half know many things. Better be a fool on one's own account than a sage on other people's approbation. I go to the basis. What matter if it be great or small, if it be called swamp or sky? A handbreadth of basis is enough for me, if it be actually basis and ground. A handbreadth of basis, thereon can one stand. In the true knowing knowledge, there is nothing great and nothing small." "Then you are perhaps an expert on the leech," asked Zarathustra, "and you investigate the leech to its ultimate basis, you conscientious one." "O Zarathustra," answered the trodden one, "that would be something immense. How could I presume to do so? That, however, of which I am master and knower, is the brain of the leech. That is my world, and it is also a world. Forgive it, however, that my pride here finds expression, for here I have not mine equal. Therefore," said I, "here I am at home. How long have I investigated this one thing, the brain of the leech, so that here the slippery truth might no longer slip from me? Here is my domain. For the sake of this did I cast everything else aside. For the sake of this did everything else become indifferent to me, and close beside my knowledge lies my black ignorance. My spiritual conscience requires from me that it should be so, that I should know one thing and not know all else. They are a loathing to me, all the semi-spiritual, all the hazy, hovering, and visionary. Where mine honesty ceases, there am I blind, and want also to be blind. Where I want to know, however, there want I also to be honest, namely, severe, rigorous, restricted, cruel, and inexorable. Because you once said, O Zarathustra, spirit is life which itself cuts into life. That led and allured me to your doctrine. And verily with mine own blood have I increased mine own knowledge, as the evidence indicates, broke in Zarathustra. For still was the blood flowing down on the naked arm of the conscientious one, for there had 10 leeches bitten into it. O you strange fellow, How much does this very evidence teach me, namely, you yourself? And not all, perhaps, might I pour into your rigorous ear. Well then, we part here, but I would fain find you again. Up here is the way to my cave. Tonight shall you there be my welcome guest. Fain would I also make amends to your body for Zarathustra treading upon you with his feet. I think about that. Just now, however, a cry of distress calls me hastily away from you. Thus spoke Zarathustra.